well in your beds.
Because if this thing comes true, there ain't gonna be any more.
It's an elevator. Somebody sent those dents up here to get us. Now, there's no controls inside, but there's maintenance overrides in there. I think I can get it to go down.
I was wrong. We were so wrong. We must leave.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I'm one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how are you, sir?
Well, I'd be warmer if I put on some pants, but that's not happening.
I understand. And we have someone in the state of New York.
Hey, this is Mike. How you doing?
Mike, how are you?
I'm fine, Phil. Yourself?
Doing all right. Also, in the state of Massachusetts.
Hi, everyone. This is Abe here.
Abe, how's it going, man?
I'm doing all right.
Very well. And a Connecticut American?
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how are you?
I'm doing awesome.
Nice. This is Dark Discussions podcast, found at www.darkdiscussions.com. Podcast that discusses horror films, science fiction, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, occasional superhero films.
Outvoted
many times. but generally, genre cinema. We try to talk intelligently about basically a genre that deserves intelligence.
It's almost like we need another podcast for non-horror films.
It's almost like that. Why haven't we thought about that?
Yes, that will be coming now officially.
Last November.
Right after Game of Thrones, as a matter of fact.
Yeah,
probably, exactly.
As you can hear, folks, we try to give intelligence, we try to give everything a fair shot, but it's a crazy house here.
Indeed. Now, let's see. I guess we can probably discuss any news anybody wanted or other genre films that people have seen or are curious about that maybe the listeners would be interested in checking out. But before we do that, we do have one email. And this is actually by a podcaster. His name is Brandon Young and does a podcast called The Anatomy of Fear.
Nice.
And yes. And he actually, it wasn't a true email. It was a post on Facebook. And I asked him if I could read it. And he said, yeah, absolutely. He loves our show. So this is what he has to say. He goes, just finished listening to this episode. Great job, guys. The episode is, I believe, The Prodigy film. I share a lot of the same feelings about the film. It was much better than I expected it was going to be. It certainly isn't going to change the horror world, but it was decent. I think there were some things that could have been done that would have made it really good or even better than it was, and it felt like there were two different styles throughout the movie. But the point of my post is to say, great episode and keep up the awesome work. Then he goes, I'm going to mention you guys on our next episode, too. I know your show has been around for ages, but I love how you guys take a pragmatic approach to reviews. And I'm happy to find another podcaster out there that makes me feel like I'm not the only Catholic horror nerd out there. So just like me and Eric, who love the devil movies, he does as well.
Well, first of all, I want to say, for pointing out that we've been around for ages, fuck you very much. stop making us feel old.
We don't need him to feel old.
But no, seriously, thank you very much. And I'm sorry I don't listen to a lot of horror podcasts anymore, because this one is eating a lot of the time I have, and I try not to listen to stuff we're talking about. And but hey, Anatomy of Fear, I'll see if I can give that a listen. Hey, you know what? Put yourself in. There might be a podcast awards thing coming up that you might be interested in. I don't know if Phil's going to mention it or not.
Yes, I actually emailed a few podcasts, including Dustin Watson of the Horror Mafia, the Horror Corridor podcast, Brandon himself of the Anatomy of Fear podcast. I emailed the Mafia, Horror Mafia podcast, and Mr. Don that runs that one, among many others, including Bloody Bits and so forth by Jason Lloyd. So basically what's going on is there's going to be a podcast awards ceremony at ScareCon New England, which is in June. And obviously if people can show up, that would be obviously cool, especially if you're nominated. But if you can't, because a lot of podcasts, as we know, are international and so forth, since anybody
and
can
four.
Listen to. Yes. We're not Kevin Smith. basically what happens is there are 8 categories that podcasts can be nominated. They can nominate themselves, or other folks can nominate them. Dark Discussions is actually participating in the nomination process. That's why we're promoting this awards ceremony, because ScareCon has asked us back once more to participate in interviews of the guests, and also to participate in helping the award show for the podcasters. So if anybody has questions that want to be nominated or anything, just email darkdiscussions@aol.com, and we can get you immediately in touch with folks, as well as get you nominated, as a matter of fact. So I don't know if you have anything further to add, Mike.
Well, I think the most important reason they want to come to ScareCon New England on June 7th, 8th, and 9th, of course,
Elvira,
the amazing guests they're going to have there.
That's right.
Including the host of the Dark Discussions podcast.
That's right.
But also, Cassandra Peterson, also known as Elvira, is going to be returning for the second year in a row.
That's right.
Probably because she found me so amazing last year.
I knew it was coming.
What part of I'm never going to stop telling people that did you not understand?
Oh, dear.
Heather Langenkamp from Nightmare on Elm Street, Nightmare on Elm Street 3, and Nightmare, Wes Craven's New Nightmare. Felissa Rose from Sleepaway Camp, and Don Cascarelli, and much of the cast of the Phantasm films.
They're putting together a heck of a guest list.
That's just starting. They're not done yet.
No, not at all. Yeah, that is awesome that the Phantasm, a large portion of the cast, obviously, the great Angus Young, Scrum,
Grimm,
or whatever.
Yeah.
Grimm, that's it. Jeez, I forgot his name. Has passed away just about 2 years ago. But a lot of other folks are going to be there. But more importantly, the director himself, who has also done some other pretty decent films as well. So that'll be kind of cool. So good point there, Mike. And yeah, who knows who else is going to be there. They have had a pretty good, last year alone, had a really good list of folks. So
yeah, and if you want, you know, we've been there now for 3 years running. This is our fourth, and every single time we've been guests on the Dorkening podcast, who were nice enough to get us involved with doing the Q&As last year, and we'll be doing so again this year. A couple of rather charming gentlemen were just on the Wicked Horror Show podcast, which is part of the Dorkening network, discussing ScareCon New England just the other day. So if you go check out the Wicked Horror Show, go to the Dorkening Facebook page or the Dorkening YouTube page and look up their Wicked Horror Show podcast from, what day was that, Phil? That was Monday?
That was Monday, yeah. Monday night.
Ravishingly handsome gentlemen were on that episode?
Yep, that was the Monday, the, what is that, the, was that the 5th? Yeah, the 5th.
Wrong, Mike, it's Wicked Horror.
March 4th episode. And everybody can see me, half the episode I'm in the dark with candles, looking like I'm at a seance because we had no power. And then the lights turn on in the middle of the episode.
Wait, how are you recording on YouTube if you had no power?
Magic!
I was using, believe it or not, I had to use my cell phone.
Dark arts.
So my little teeny cell phone was what I was using to do the episode. But yeah, we had an explosion at the end of our street. A transformer just blew up. And the whole pole burned down. And the road is still blocked 3 days later.
Sweet.
As a matter of fact. Yeah, it's kind of weird. I posted a picture on Facebook of the fire. So,
Bill and his neighbors have already resorted to cannibalism.
Indeed.
That was before the power outage.
Yes. Yeah, there you go. So that's exciting. So the Wicked Horror Show, me and Mike were there. And actually, one of the people that run Scarecon was on the episode, too, a guy named Crest. And he answers a lot of questions. So
awesome.
It's actually a pretty informative.
Right, Crest is a really good guy. He does all the pictures for the professional photo ops there, and he fights holes in teeth. So,
right. And he does makeup, too. He actually was directly across from where Dark Discussions was last year, and yet we didn't really know him. It was just kind of funny. But you couldn't miss him because there were these very hot chicks that were like promoting the makeup over there. So, and he was working over there. So it was.
I remember him because he stole my email.
Oh, did he?
Well, we're both we have different whatever addresses, but we're both Mr. D. So
there you go. Also, Dark Discussions will be going to Mystic again. We are changing the date a little bit to what date was that again, Eric?
July 27th.
Yeah, so the 26th, 27th, and 28th, right? So Friday night, we'll probably do Mystic Pizza again like we did, so that'll be the 26th. And then the 27th, we'll go see a movie and do a podcast on that movie. And then Sunday, we'll have it open-ended and determine what we'll
figure
do.
Figure out something to do.
Exactly. We're hoping that it'll be bigger this year. Leo of the Dorkening, which Mike just mentioned, said he's going to attend again. And, nice. Yeah, he's a good guy. And hopefully we'll get a few other folk as well. All right, so let's see what else. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up? Movies or news? Anything?
I got some movies.
Go ahead.
All right. The first one was one that was actually recommended by Jason Lloyd of Horrorphilia. Called The Axiom, and he the reason I watched it is because he said, if you like The Triangle and The Endless, then you'll probably like this movie. And I was like, well, I love both those movies, so I'll check it out. I don't think The Axiom was nearly as good as either of the movies he compared it to, but I think it was decent, and some people will probably like it more than I did. So you can check that out. I also watched a movie on Hulu. They actually have a series of horror movies they're producing. I think Blumhouse is somehow involved, but they're called Into the Dark. And the latest one that came out was called Treehouse, and actually stars Jimmy Simpson, who is in Westworld, that we do another podcast about.
Oh, yeah. I saw advertisements for that.
Right. And it's pretty decent. So if you have Hulu, I would recommend checking out Treehouse. And I also... did I talk about Eli Roth's History of Horror on the show?
You have not, no.
Okay, well, I checked that out, and it's really good.
It's on Shudder now, right? It's on Shudder.
It is on Shudder, yep. So if you're into horror, I would definitely recommend checking it out. And even though I hold a grudge against Eli Roth because of Green Inferno, I'm a big enough man to realize when something's good and not slam it just because of the person involved making it. It almost is good enough to let me forgive him for Green Inferno, but almost.
Let's
remember that Roger Ebert was a great film critic, but he also wrote Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
That's a great film. That's a great film. I got the criterion. I got the criterion of that.
I will say that, Eric, when you had posted that, I had mentioned it on the podcast back in October when it was airing, because I was actually watching it every week.
Uh-huh.
And I will say that the ghost episode, which was the last episode, which was the one I was most excited for, was a little bit disappointing. So I don't know if you got to that one yet, but
I did. I thought it was fine.
Do you know why it was
disappointing? You're just a ghost snob.
There was a lot that was skipped.
Well, that's why you were disappointed, because it was the one you were looking forward to the most, and it's the one you know the most about. And so a 40-minute after you take the commercials out, cursory skimming of the genre is just not going to cut it.
Right, but they did a double for, like, the zombies, I think, or one of them. And I was like, well,
for slashers, I think they did a double.
Or slashers.
Yeah, it was slashers. They did a double. Yep.
Yeah,
series. So I second Eric's recommendation. It's awesome.
Now, I don't know, Eric, if they have the extras on Hulu or not. But I know when I was Pam and I had recorded it off of.
Are you talking about History of Horror?
Yeah.
That's actually on Shudder, not Hulu.
Oh, Shudder. I'm sorry.
No, I just wanted to make that correction for the listeners.
That's all right. Because sometimes Shudder puts on, like, commentary tracks and whatnot, but I know AMC aired, like, the unedited interview with Quentin Tarantino, or a less edited interview.
So
And it was, like, 10 to 15 minutes long?
They just have snippets of it scattered throughout.
Oh, okay. So if you can find that, where they have, like, extended interviews with the individual people, and I don't know if they did it with for anybody other than Tarantino. I thought they did, but maybe I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. I would recommend trying to seek that out. And speaking of Quentin Tarantino, does everybody know what his next movie is?
No.
Yes.
What is it? Yes. I did.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood,
which is about...
About Sharon Tate.
Yeah, Sharon Tate. That ties into the...
Helter Skelter.
The Helter Skelter and the Manson murders. Anyone want to guess when that's going to be released?
This summer?
This summer, July 26th.
Oh, really? That's the movie we're doing? That's the movie
it
we're doing?
It could be. We'll have to discuss
it. If it gets released on time, we know. I don't know
if there's anybody
like
on this podcast who are like vehemently anti-Tarantino, that we'll have to discuss that.
No.
I think you also have Crawl coming out, which is the... I can't remember who made that one. Was that the Aja film? Is the Killer Alligator movie? That's a little bit earlier in July. Annabelle 3 is out. The Boy 2 is out. So there's a lot of horror. I'm like, you know, last time we were kind of like, what do we want to see?
There will be options.
Right. Nothing! There should be plenty of stuff out there.
So after I watched the History of Horror, actually watching one of the interviews in that made me want to go revisit Cujo. Because they were interviewing Dee Wallace about that on History of Horror, and she was talking about how everybody's worried about the dogs that were involved with the movie, and that the dogs were actually treated much better than she was, and that the dogs were having such a good time they actually had to tie their tails down because they were wagging. And if you, I noticed this when I went back and watched Cujo again. In one of the scenes, they missed a tail because there's one scene where Cujo is about attack somebody, but if you look at him, his tail is wagging.
That's too funny.
I had forgotten how effective that movie is in some scenes. There are some downright terrifying scenes in Cujo when the dog is attacking, and I had forgotten how effective they are.
Well, yeah,
so if you haven't seen it, or you haven't seen it in a while, I would recommend giving Cujo another look.
It's the only book I ever actually had to put down, because the scene where the policeman gets ripped
apart.
It was which was pretty shocking. Hey, did you say something?
Yeah, I felt Dee Wallace and the kid were really good in capturing that terror, and also just how the elements were just eroding them. You know, the entire ordeal, you could just see it take its toll, and it was very visceral.
That's part of what Dee Wallace was talking about when they were done shooting the movie. She actually had to be treated for exhaustion. So yeah, that's there's some stuff going on.
Speaking of this Eli Roth show, I have to honestly state that more than anybody, Eli Roth was the person that got me back into horror films, because he wrote an article for Rotten Tomatoes where he discussed 7 horror films you've never heard of that you should see, and of course they're all like the.
Is he the one that started that?
No, he didn't start it, but he did it.
Did what?
Like he's one, because that's been around forever. But yeah, he's starting the horror films you haven't seen.
Oh well, yeah. Well, he wrote it, and of course all the films were Italian or Spaniard or German horror films from the 70s. And so that's how I've discovered all those Italian directors and Spanish and German directors that are now all on Blu-ray, you know. So it's amazing. He was like had his thumb on the pulse of where horror nostalgia was going way before it became hip to bring all these films back to Blu-ray and a lot of horror podcasts for that matter that discuss them continuously. So I got to give him credit on that alone.
I did want to bring something up briefly, and that is for my birthday, just mostly because I wanted to recommend this to the listeners if they haven't seen it. I have probably discussed this on the podcast before, but while we're on the topic of Stephen King, there was an excellent feature-length documentary called Unearthed and Untold, The Path to Pet Cemetery. It's excellent. And last year, there was a Blu-ray release of this documentary with a ton of really great special features on it. It has an audio commentary with the creators of the documentary, a podcast commentary as well. It has edited and alternate scenes. It has video interviews with the creators of the documentary. It's got featurettes. It's got Pet Sematary location photo compilations, documentary poster art concepts. So if you enjoyed the original Pet Sematary, and, you know, there is a new Pet Sematary, an updated one coming out, I think, in just a couple of months from now. So if you're interested in that, I highly recommend the documentary. And if you're a big enough fan, I highly recommend you buy the Blu-ray, because there is just a wealth of material on there.
It's very odd that documentaries now have their own audio commentaries and special features.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm really
commentary.
I mean, I'm a documentary whore, whether it's no matter what it is. I watch documentaries all the time. In fact, today I was doing some mailing projects at work and I was bored. So I watched a documentary on Shackleton, and I watched a documentary on volcanoes, and I watched a documentary on the Franklin expedition. So I'll watch documentaries on anything as long as they're good. And this one I would put on par with The Shark Is Not Working, which is the big Jaws documentary. That's good. Yeah, it's really good, and it's really worth your time. So if you are a fan, definitely check it out.
Anyone remember when they used to do this shit to put on the Blu-rays instead of being
a separate thing?
Yep. You get like the 2-disc special edition of Pet Sematary, disc 1, the movie, with special features like subtitles and chapter skips, and then disc 2 would be the big 2-hour documentary with interviews with everybody involved and all the rest of it. You know, it's kind of sad to me. I'm happy that these are being made. It's a pain in the ass that you have to pay.
It's a way to make sure you pay the extra buck.
Well, I'll say one thing, like Scream Factory with their Return of the Living Dead, the documentary, they actually added to the second disc, which was kind
of
good.
Yeah, and they've done that with a few of, like, the Scream Factory or Criterion.
Nightmare on Elm Street, too. I have the 8-disc set. That was, like, $25. And the documentary that Eric just watched is
Never
on.
Sleep Again?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so, but you're right. Most times now, it doesn't happen unless they're boutique labels that somehow are able to get all the stuff and put it together and give it to you. Some of these labels, like Vinegar Syndrome, actually produce their own or hire a third company to produce a documentary of the film, which is kind of funny. Like Synapse does it too, where they hired a third party to do an hour and 20-minute documentary on the movie Popcorn, the horror movie Popcorn, and they put it on their release of Popcorn. So it's kind of funny, but these separate documentaries, they have to buy the rights to it and to get it on the disc. Similar, so that's how like Return of the Living Dead was able to do it. They had to, it was independently produced, the documentary, and they put it on the disc when they released the boutique disc.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, I would honestly have to check my facts, because I don't have it in front of me, but I think that this is actually fan-made. I think this is like a fan-made documentary. I don't think it's like, you know, it's...
A lot of them are now.
Well, they all are. Most documentaries are just, quote-unquote, people that make them, and then they are picked up by a production company to, or I should say, right. A distribution company.
Right. I've got one on Fright Night, but there's a lot of these that are out there now. The thing that amazes me is, like you mentioned, popcorn. We're old enough, except for Abe, we're old enough now to remember when these movies were originally in theaters, right?
Right.
And we can remember, they only gave a shit about popcorn, and not a lot of people still do. But it's got a cult following. The idea that, I guarantee you, there was a blockbuster movie that came out that month in whatever, 1989 or 1990, and nobody remembers that blockbuster movie.
Right.
And popcorn is getting a 2-hour documentary.
That's correct. Yep.
So I kind of find, I do find that funny, like how there'll be these movies that were big hits and nobody remembers them anymore.
Yep.
They're still trying to remake them, but nobody remembers there was.
Well, that's the thing, right? It's like all these, as I mentioned about those Italian horror films from the 70s that are now all getting special editions and whatnot. And it's basically new people discovering films that they never knew about. You know, I mean, popcorn, like you said, it came and went, and then it was on blockbuster shelves and people were able to see it then. But now a whole new generations are discovering this film and saying, oh, this is actually a pretty good film. This is an interesting film. This is, you know, whatever. And they're getting second lives, which is kind of interesting. So I guess that's a good thing, too. Anything else anybody has? I know, Eric, you finished up some stuff that you'd seen. I tried to watch that documentary you suggested, Eric, on Netflix. What's it called again?
Abducted in Plain Sight.
Yeah, Abducted in Plain Sight, that I know Dustin Watson of Horror Carter had watched, and a few others. And I had to stop it after like 40 minutes. It was just so disturbingly disgusting. And so I had to switch to a different documentary on Netflix about
a clear palette.
about a paper company in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
That's not a documentary, Phil.
I live 90 minutes from Scranton, Pennsylvania. It's a fucking documentary, damn it.
That's right. It is. But yeah, I said, okay, I told Eric after like 40 minutes ago, I have to switch back to watching The Office to clean my, I just feel dirty.
Weak. You're weak, Phil.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. It's pretty
so gross. I'm guessing this is a documentary that is not for Chrissy.
It's on Netflix. It's you can't believe that the people involved with this whole thing are as dumb as they are.
Yeah,
educator here, I could totally believe it.
When I say gross and disgusting, I don't mean violent or anything that you see on screen. It's just what they talk about, and just to see that these people did all these weird things, and then they're actually willing to go on camera and be basically exploited too. It's like, this is just
what is it? What is it about?
It's about a family and a friend of theirs, quote unquote friend of theirs, and the parents basically let this family friend kidnap their daughter twice.
Ew.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole thing's weird.
That sounds very creepy.
I my brother was telling me about it, and you know, there's one point where it's just, I won't spoil it, but when he told me what happened in a car, for example, I couldn't believe what he had just told me. I thought he was making it up.
Yes, that was the scene. I said, I texted Eric and I go, I'm shutting this off. And Eric says, you have to wait until the aliens.
But Phil, you got to watch the whole thing for the end where the little dog saves the day.
No one's going to save these people, Eric. I mean, Mike.
Yeah, he's right about that.
Yeah, that was the
Eric,
scene.
Eric, you're not backing me up here.
Yeah, that was the scene, Abe, that I said, that's it, I'm done. But I stuck out for another 10 minutes because Eric mentioned the aliens, so I was saying, all right, maybe something cool about the Greys. And of course, it's like, oh my God, these people are so stupid. That's it. I'm out of here. I'm going to watch a documentary about a paper company in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Oh.
But you know, that whole thing in the car, that's what she said. But it wasn't Yeah, I won't even say it. Anyway.
If you want to watch a documentary about some crazy shit, check out Abducted in Plain Sight.
Yeah. Eric actually suggested that maybe that we could do an episode on it. I'm glad we did not decide to do so.
Weak. You're weak, Phil.
Next week.
It sounds kind of fucking weird and amazing, actually.
It is kind of weird and amazing.
And yet all anybody talks about is the fire documentaries.
Fire documentaries.
And never mind. Let's move on.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Look it up. It's fire with a Y.
F-Y-R-E. The music festival.
Oh, that. Yeah, that's been... And Netflix has been trying to force that on us for months. Now,
Netflix just decides what you should watch.
Yeah, it's like, I'm done. I'm not watching this.
I watch The Matrix. You'll enjoy Fuller House. No.
Yeah, I know. Their things crack me up.
All right, so Mike, Chrissy, Abe, anything you guys wanted to discuss? Anything? Go ahead, Abe.
I recently revisited Mimic.
Mimic? Oh, the Del Toro film.
Yeah, I haven't watched it in a long time, and I heard about the trouble he had with the studio and everything like that. And I heard this was a director's cut, and I was really interested to see, just kind of get a look at what the film he intended to be as. It didn't give me a whole lot of changes. I saw on the film that I still remember really liking stuff like that. I loved the creature effects. I thought the performance was pretty good. I loved the environment and the old tunnel ways and stuff like that. But it does come with a lot of documentaries and stuff, talking about. Reclaim the film and trying to restore it in some way and stuff like that. And I thought it was kind of an interesting thing because one of the things that we sometimes encounter on the show is films that sometimes face a lot of production problems, whether it's pulls for different endings or complete script changes and stuff like that. And you get to kind of see different side to the whole thing, and you get this, an idea of what could have been. Overall, it was a nice little revisit, but I didn't get a chance to really look at the special features. But that's all I really had on my end. But it was a good price, only like maybe $13 for the Blu-ray and digital copy.
I have that too. It was okay movie. It was nothing spectacular. But then again, I'm not really a Del Toro fan anyway. But it was all right. But you're right. The disc, the director's edition Blu-ray is loaded. So if you like the film, there's a lot of good stuff on it. Mike or Chrissy, anything?
I'm a fan of the film. It was a creature feature at a time when creature features were very, very rare in the theaters. Nobody really knew who Del Toro was. That was my first exposure to him. It's not the greatest film, but I enjoy it a lot. And you can get the discs cheap now, and I'm sure it's free streaming someplace.
But any news or movies you wanted to mention for listeners?
No, I'm good.
All right. Chrissy?
Nope, I'm good. I said just that one thing I had to say, and I'm all set.
Okay, sounds good. So I guess we can get into our topic tonight. Eric, why don't you let everybody know what we're going to discuss tonight?
Tonight we're going to be discussing a movie that's currently available on several streaming services called The Hole in the Ground.
There was an old woman who lived in the woods.
You know, when I was your age, I moved town once too. Three.
Two.
One. Down by the river.
Chris, wait.
Mom?
Never run off me like that again, okay?
There were three loud knocks coming knocking on the door.
There's something not right with me lately.
Three loud knocks.
I can't
can't put my finger on it, but I know.
It's not your boy.
She didn't mean him any harm, you know. She was convinced.
Of what?
That he was an imposter.
I know I sound crazy, but if it was yours, you would know.
What's wrong with you, Mommy?
Mommy, where are you?
It's not your boy.
Mommy,
it's not your boy.
Two.
What have you done with him?
One.
I love you, Mommy.
That's right. The Hole in the Ground was a film that I mentioned in our 2019 preview episode, it being the next A24 film, unlike their prior quote-unquote big films that they pick up as a horror film. This one went straight to VOD, probably because it is a European film rather than American. And so maybe they didn't feel that it would do well in U.S. theaters. It's an Irish film directed by first-time director Lee Cronin, or at least first-time. This is basically his first feature-length film. Written by him and another guy named Steve Shields. Stars Sienna Kerslake. Don't know much about her, but she plays the lead actress in the film. Has a decent role by James Cosmo, best known for Game of Thrones, where he played the head of the Night's Watch in that TV show, and a couple other folks, but again, like Sienna Kerslake, I wasn't too familiar with them. But all in all, not much else I got, except that I knew it was a film that was coming, and I had, or at least was anticipated by me, and it was again an A24 film. Folks who are curious about that, they're the ones that brought Hereditary and The Witch, and It Comes at Night, among other films. So I guess we can go around and discuss how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So I guess I'll start. I found out about it, like I said, when I was doing research for films of 2019 for our 2019 episode. This was one of the films I said, oh, I gotta put this on my list. So that's how I heard about it. Otherwise, I didn't know anything about it. And then it suddenly just popped out on the streaming services about a week ago, and I mentioned it to everybody that, you know, maybe we should do it, especially since it was getting fairly good reviews. I believe 89% on Rotten Tomatoes. So I watched it last night, I have to say that I think it's a pretty damn good, solid film. It could have been a great film, like really good, but it had some issues that I felt weakened it, but all in all, I pretty much liked this film a whole lot. It was really spooky. I think that the thing that made it good was that when there was some scary moments, it was scary, I felt. There was a couple that didn't work, but there was some that really did hit it out of the ballpark. Even my dog, I was telling Eric through instant message that my dog suddenly had to stop chewing her bone, look at the TV, and like turned her head like there was something weird going on, and she knew it was not right. And I had to agree, it was one of the scarier parts of the film. Good film, and I would check it out. Eric?
I think I first heard about this when Jason Lloyd posted about it on Facebook. And I was going to get around to it eventually, and then Phil decided we were doing it this week. So I checked it out. I liked it. First of all, I thought the movie just looked gorgeous. Really liked the cinematography on it. And I agree that the story was pretty well told, fairly creepy in parts. And yeah, I'll save the rest for after the spoiler flag. But I like the movie, and I recommend checking it out.
All right, very good. Oh, one other thing I forgot. It's an Irish film. It's from Ireland. All right, let's go with you, Mike.
How I found out about it? Phil did it. I'm guessing during the preview podcast, and then what do we want to watch this week? And you brought it up, so there we were. Is this like the third Evil Child film we've done in a month?
Yeah, it is. It is the year of the Evil Child.
Yeah, because we also got Brightburn as well.
That's coming too. Yeah.
What was that one?
Brightburn. The James
Brightburn.
Gunn film.
Okay.
James,
yeah.
Roy from the Office.
Yeah. So I saw this with my wife. Now I'm going to preface this by saying that I was an idiot. I rented it, and it wasn't that much more expensive to buy it. Usually I end up pulling the trigger and buying it. I was a little under the weather when I was watching it, and I think there might have been some small things here and there that I missed, and I wanted to rewatch it, but I just ended up sleeping most of the next day and didn't get a chance to rewatch it while I was still on the rental. So I didn't get a chance to rewatch it. I liked it a lot. My wife liked it. She didn't like it as much as The Prodigy, and I think she might have liked it more than The Golem. I'm not sure where I'd put it. I like The Golem more, but I still like this one a lot too. I would recommend it. It's not long. It's got some great atmosphere. I think it's a solid film. That's all I have to say.
All right, Chrissy.
For me, I enjoyed this film. I think if we're ranking it with Golem and The Prodigy, I'd have to put Golem at number one, and then this one, and then The Prodigy as the third in line. If we're just rating those three movies, just for the heck of it, since you guys brought it up, I really thought that where this film excelled was in the atmosphere. I have heard that people have said, including you guys, that this film was beautifully shot, and I do agree with that. There's just the countryside, how everything always looks wet, like it just rained, even though it didn't. The way that the skies are always very gray, the clouds are very gray. I think it really excels in that. I think some of the creepy stuff is nicely done, but most of the creepy stuff was subtle. I will say, though, that I don't think this movie would have been as interesting for me if I hadn't seen it as a giant metaphor for this troubled woman and what she was going through, which I will go into after we throw up the spoiler alert. Once I kind of figured out what her backstory was by the couple of subtle hints, a metaphor just kind of fell into place for me, and then I was just kind of watching the movie for that. I do think the film is solid story-wise. It's just, for me, I don't know. This is not one of those movies I'm going to run to and watch again. I was just kind of like, yeah, this is kind of there. I just really enjoyed the metaphor. But other than that, for me, it was just kind of there. I'm not going to give it a huge rave. I think as a dark psychological drama, it was very good. But as a horror piece, I don't know, not so much. Does that make any sense at all?
Okay, very well. Yeah, that's fine. And I think we got Abe, right?
Yep. So I heard about this also from the preview for 2019. I watched it yesterday, like Phil did. I definitely agree it's a well-shot film. It looks really good. Really good uses of camera angles and the use of the lighting and stuff. And also just the atmosphere is really solid. I thought the performances, too, were mostly actually overall pretty good. Overall, I enjoyed the film. I don't think this is a film I would ever revisit. It didn't really leave that much of an impact on me in that regard as a film that I would ever own or ever revisit again. But I can acknowledge that it had where its strengths are. I could definitely see a lot of symbolisms and little themes here and there. It's a good film. If I was comparing this film and to The Golem, since I didn't see The Prodigy, they're pretty close. So I can't really say which is, at least in my opinion, which is better or worse. But I think maybe for the smallest story, the much tinier cast works to its advantage. I feel it gives more time with the build-up and the mystery and the strange, unsettling aura that builds up towards the climax. I don't know where this film could possibly place. It definitely wouldn't be my top 10. Maybe my low top 20, but that depends on how the rest of the year plays out. So I guess in terms of other things, we'll talk about those things when we start our spoiler section.
All right, very good. All right, so Eric, do we have a wiki by chance?
Wiki. All right. Hang on, folks. Here we go. This is longer than usual on IMDb. Trying to escape her broken past, Sarah O'Neill is building a new life on the fringes of a backwood rural town with her young son, Chris. A terrifying encounter with a mysterious neighbor shatters her fragile security, throwing Sarah into a spiraling nightmare of paranoia and mistrust as she tries to uncover if the disturbing changes in her little boy are connected to an ominous sinkhole buried deep in the forest that borders their home.
Dun, dun, dun.
All right, that's fairly good, except for the ending last sentence where I don't think she had a connection to the sinkhole until later in the film. But yeah, I guess it doesn't matter. It's fair. It's a fair one. Yeah, it's good. It's good.
It's lengthy.
Yeah, it is lengthy. Actually, even the...
that's what she said.
Oh!
Well done, Mike. Even the iTunes one was fairly lengthy too. But that works. I'm actually a bit surprised. I felt this may be the best film so far I've seen this year for horror. Took a step.
Kind of tearing it to pieces via text message last night.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. This film reminds me on how I felt about Annihilation last year, where my first viewing, and I had to see it a second time, like the next day. And even though I liked it, it still bothered me. Something about it bothered me. But by the end of the year, it ran right up the top of my list to be, I think, the third best horror film of last year for me. So I don't think this is as good as Annihilation, but I feel that it could be a film that that I am mixed on, but more liking it, similar to Annihilation last year when I first saw it. And then by the end of the year, I'll revisit it or rethink about it and like it even more and more and more. So I was fairly happy about it, even though, yeah, you're right, Eric, I threw out some complaints when discussing it with you in text message yesterday.
I want to say one thing, and this isn't a spoiler, but perhaps my favorite shot in the entire movie was the opening title shot.
Oh, yes, how it kind of turns upside down.
Yeah, because it was a drone shot, and we've seen this shot before, and I thought it was going to be that, but where it's a drone overhead on a car driving down the road, and then the camera pans up to look down the road. You know, we've seen that in more than one movie. And they did that here, except they flipped the picture. I'm assuming it's not. I've never flown a drone, but I'm assuming it's not actually possible to fly a drone upside down. So I'm guessing that they filmed it and then flipped the negative upside down or manipulated it with digital video somehow. So when the camera pans up to look down the road, that happens, but it's upside down. So when it's done doing its pan, you end up with the sky on the bottom of the screen.
That's how I think they did that in the movie The Devil. Devil, the one, that elevator movie.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Yeah, right, because it starts with a flipped Pittsburgh or Philly.
Philly.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed that. I wasn't expecting that immediately out of the gates. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
I was saying, it's funny because I was just rewatching the first season of American Gods, and there's a commentary track by the showrunners on the first episode, and one of the things they say on a particular tracking shot is that how drones have completely revolutionized shooting TV shows.
You don't need the cranes anymore. You don't need
right,
cranes.
And that very much applies to, I imagine, low budget filmmaking too. There's so much more you can do now that you have drones that you never would have been able to get away with.
Exactly.
And some of it's stupid, like in the Blair Witch. Yeah, but you know, but yeah, that you can get shots now that used to cost, you know, you have to get a plane or a helicopter or a crane, or now you get a $200 drone from Best Buy.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Mike, did you buy the disc for American Gods?
Yeah. I got them, I think, on like Black Friday deal or something.
Gotcha.
Well, I will say, just as long as you're mentioning that opening shot, that one of the things that I absolutely loved about that opening shot is that, to me, it was very reminiscent of The Shining.
Oh, well,
you're not wrong.
Kubrick's The Shining opening shot, homage.
Well,
yeah.
Well, this whole film, me and Eric were mentioning it through.
There's another homage to The Shining later in the movie.
Yeah, there's a few.
Yeah. That's funny, Chris, because I said that. I said, well, there's The Shining shot, and then it did the inversion, so it kind of went a little differently. But I thought the same thing.
Yeah, and then there's the one later on that we'll discuss. Me and Eric saw it immediately. I think this director knows his horror films, this Cronin guy, and he's obviously a fan of The Shining, I think, because of these couple of scenes. I felt that there was a couple of interesting things about the first 5 minutes of the film, because obviously you're talking about, you know, just the shot with the drone, but there's a scene where the mother is looking at her boy at like the carnival or whatever it is. And then there's a scene when they're driving in the car and they're talking to each other and then an accident occurs. But both of those, I think, have a lot of things in it that are fairly important or interesting. The scene when she's looking at her boy and you just see her expression, and then when she's finally talking to her boy and not looking at the road. And I guess we'll get into those. But if you notice, the first 5 minutes of the film, there's no talking. It's just her expression watching the boy, and then, of course, the scene with the drone following the car. I noticed that. That was interesting. And then at around the five-minute mark, that's when the conversation is in the car. And the collision happens. And I was watching the collision when it was happening. Basically, she's talking to her son in the car, and there she's looking at her son, and I go, this is going to be a terrible film, because she's watching her son and not looking at the road. And a lot of films back in the past, if you watch, my father mentioned it once to me when I was a kid. He goes, look, these people are talking in the car and they're not watching the road. People don't drive this way. This is not how it works. And so every time I watch a film from that day on, I always notice it. And it was happening in this film as well. But an accident occurs. Well, in most films, they don't. You know what I'm saying? It's something that they just screw up. And this was intentionally, she wasn't looking at the road and talking to her son. So I thought that was pretty pretty sweet, and that's when I said, okay, this may be a good film. All right, sorry, that may have been a tangent I thought people would be curious about, but do we want to throw up the spoiler right away, or do we want to talk about the scene when she's looking at her boy at the carnival thing?
I do like the use of the funhouse mirror as a kind of distortion of features. That kind of really comes down to, especially since mirrors end up having playing a role in the
That's a good point, Abe. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they do play a role in the film. It's actually a three beat, because you have the creepy mirrors in the beginning, and then the second beat is the guy in the middle says something to the effect of, the only place you can see this is in the mirror, or something like that. That's what Noreen's husband tells her. The mirror always tells the truth. That's what he says. And then the last shot in the film has the mirror.
There's also the funeral.
Oh, right. There's one at the funeral, too, isn't there? So I guess, well, then technically it's not really a three beat, but you could argue it still sort of is. It's a four beat. Because it does grow in importance. So technically it could be a four beat. And that's fine. You know, it doesn't always have to be three. Sometimes you can do four or more.
I didn't mean to crush your dreams on this one. I just was saying.
No, you didn't, because you know what else? Her car mirror gets broken off.
Yeah, well, mirrors are a theme, right? Through the whole thing.
They're a theme. So technically, right. So it's not a three beat then. It would actually be a motif, which works just as well. It works to serve the purpose the same way. But I think what's interesting about that, Abe, to key off of what you said, is that it's also one of the things this movie does well is foreshadowing. Almost everything that happens in this movie is foreshadowed within the first 20 minutes. And the child making the warped face, or the monster faces, it kind of conveys, or it tells you what the whole movie's about. Like, what is he? What is the inner monster inside him? And the past that his mom is trying to escape is very subtly rendered. It's not like, oh, I left my husband, he was abusive. You know, we only get like two or three little bits and some actions, which is one of the places where this movie really excels, to kind of give us the whole backstory of what her life was like.
I'm not even convinced it's true either, because first of all, she's an unreliable narrator somewhat. And I'm still convinced that scar may have been from the accident when they hit the woman.
It could have been. I didn't pick up on that.
And there was no signs of abuse on the boy. The boy never mentions anything about abuse from the father. And yes, I know a parent can abuse their spouse without abusing their children, but I think it was left intentionally limited of what we know, because I think the director, screenwriters wanted us to think, is the whole thing, she's just going nuts, or is there really a beast, a monster, a supernatural presence out there?
Yeah, I would agree, because I did see elements of that. The way that I kind of got the abusive husband, or maybe not specifically abuse, but just an emotionally unstable, maybe even a narcissistic relationship, was that, you know, and I'm probably going to get hate mail if I say this, but the way that she dresses, her clothing, and the way that she carries herself a little bit slumped were very indicative to me of someone who has low self-esteem because she's been beaten down or abused. Now, that was like a subtle clue that I picked up. But also, she jumps to conclusions. When the kid disappears, she immediately jumps to the conclusion that somebody has taken her son. And then a few scenes later, she says, "You're not allowed to go outside on your own." And those three things, plus what the doctor asked her, plus where the kid was like, "You said daddy was coming and he wasn't," kind of made me think that she was on the run, concerned about the ex-husband finding them and stealing her kid.
Which is different than abuse, which is much different than abuse.
Right, but he could have, but a lot of times when women are trying to escape a narcissist, or they are trying to escape an abusive husband, that's what they do. She picks this out-of-the-way town, don't go outside by yourself, oh my God, somebody took my kid. Like, she's obviously paranoid. So whoever this guy was she was married to is probably capable of that type of behavior. Or at least, for the sake of argument, Phil, she's convinced that he's capable of that type of behavior. But the louder thing for me was the way that she carried her body and the way that the writers chose to clothe her. Her clothing is, you know, kind of sloppy. It's not very attractive.
Right, overalls, you know, whatever.
She's and I know she's working on her house, but still, she just looks like she's not.
When she went to the child's music play, yeah, she's dressed like a bum instead of, you know, like most people would dress up a little bit, you would think.
Most of the clothes she wears are very dull and subdued.
Yes. Yeah, that was another thing. You know, and I think I have to give the movie big, huge points for that, because that is such, you know, a lot of times, we watch these horror movies all the time. So, you know, we're used to, oh my gosh, the woman or whoever it is vulnerable because they have this bad experience. But honestly, there are so few films where you see that this is kind of really stated in the character's clothes and in the way she carries herself. One film that does that very well, though, is Kubrick's The Shining with the wife. You know, you can tell from the way she dressed that she's just not in a happy environment, that he might be a little bit abusive, the way she carries herself. Walks, the way she's kind of dowdy and just sort of dressed like very conservatively and not, you know, pride.
That could technically be true, and they can use that to make a point for a visual audience. But in real life, if we just see people, you know, I mean, if you're in a hotel like in The Shining for 6 months, snowbound, you're probably going to just wear comfortable clothes. So a woman I could see is going to be wearing jeans, a sloppy sweatshirt, and sneakers. You know, she's not going to wear heels and a nice dress walking down, because there's no one there except her husband, and her kid.
I get that, but my point is not, it's not just here's what you're wearing, you look sloppy. It's a whole demeanor. It's the demeanor and the clothes that make that statement, not just the clothes themselves. Look at how many horror movies we see where, yeah, the woman's hanging out in her PJs or whatever, but she's walking tall and she's confident and she's the heroine of the story. You know what I mean? Or whatever. Well, so you get a sense that she's confident. This woman felt beaten down to me.
Well,
like she was just beaten down.
You could be right that that's the case, but I also thought maybe she's just a low self-esteem person. I mean, because she just, I mean, the first scene alone where she's looking at her son doing the monster faces in the clown house, she has a dapper face, and I got a couple of things out of that. Either she's looking at her son as a weight that ruined her life, or that it's the son is a symbol of dreams that never came. Because you know people, and then you find out later in the movie that she was planning to become a teacher, but she had to quit college because she got pregnant and she had the son. And so my idea was for a lot of the film, even though she loves her son, a lot of the film she was looking at her son as a life that she wouldn't have had if she could do her life all over again. And so she was down on herself, down on everything about her life. And as a result, when people are negative about themselves, they're more apt to not comb their hair or shave if they're men or wear nice clothes, because they dress the way they feel as people.
Or they're podcasters.
Ba-dum-bum. So yeah, I mean, it definitely makes a statement, and
I stepped away from my mic for a minute. Are we doing a fashion podcast?
We're discussing how she was very dapper and how she dressed, and Chrissy mentioned that she felt that it was a symbol of how she must have been feeling when she was married and lived with her ex-husband. And I was stating that it was more for her own self-esteem, that she didn't have much self-esteem about herself in the life that she had. But I guess it could be interpreted either way, or it just may be.
I have no opinion.
Oh, yeah.
Or it could have just been the
casting director said, all right, wear these clothes.
I think it's the kind of thing that really, I think you both make really good arguments. And I don't know that one is necessarily exclusive of the other, right? The stuff about how she feels about her son, you know, the obvious he's my son. I love my son feelings. And then this maybe subsurface resentment, right? Go back to mom and dad from last year.
Yep.
Right. The you may love your child, but not always, you know, there are some regrets to come with it. So I think that's probably part of it. I don't think we ever get a clear answer. And again, I know there was stuff I was missing because I wasn't 100% with it while I was watching it. And a lot I forgot, and even though it's only been a few days. And so you're bringing back a lot of stuff I just completely forgotten in the last few days. And I think they're all good points. I think this really bears another rewatch and a little more scrutiny to keep an eye out for something like that. Are there more hints besides the scar? Are there more hints besides, you know, the comment about the father? You know, why is it that she's kind of run off into hiding? Is she hiding from the father? What, you know, what is she getting away from? And all stuff like that. I guess I wasn't really thinking of the first time through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I said, it was that sort of metaphor that once I kind of grabbed onto it, whether that's just my subjective interpretation of it or whether that was what was intended, pardon me, that's what made this movie really fascinating for me. That's what made me keep watching. Because once I picked up on that, I was like, oh my God, there's stuff here to watch for.
Right. Well, see,
and then it kept me interested and kept me hooked.
I mean, we've seen so many films about abusive families and broken families and all that, that I was like, okay, this is bothering me because it's just another one of those and this is another metaphor. But then I was thinking this was more a metaphor of her son, similar to like the Babadook, where she just had issues being a single mom. She ran, whether she ran away from the father or not, again, the son never talked bad about the father, said it was a bad situation, you know, why isn't dad here, you know. So in other words, there was nothing except her demeanor that made mm-hmm. it sound like that the father may have been an issue rather than anything else. Yeah, go ahead.
I honestly was under the impression that the father was dead.
Because
the kid made a comment at one point about, I know you don't like to talk about dad because it makes you sad.
Oh, that's a brilliant one, Eric.
Oh.
You could have been right.
There's definitely a theme about burying the past and also kind of covering things in earth. The fact that the mother is doing refurbishing of the walls kind of gives a symbol of removing the past. She spends a lot of time removing the old wallpaper and stuff.
Yeah.
Dedicating her time to trying, not only just to improve the house, but it kind of shows she's also trying to create a clean slate.
By the way, did anybody besides Phil notice the pattern on the wallpaper?
And you,
I did, The Shining.
There you go.
It's the carpet.
And The Shining in black and white.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah, that was a nice little thing there, too. But there's definitely a lot of things about trying to move on from what had transpired. I mean, we also have a second character. I forgot the actor's name, but he was in Game of Thrones.
That's right.
I forgot the guy's name.
Cosmos.
Thank you. Yeah. Cosmos. See, you know, he's a character, too, who's literally hounded by the past because of what had transpired. He's the only other character alongside his wife, who dies rather early, who has a connection to our main character in terms of what's going on. In terms of how to explain, essentially come to an acceptance of things were never as they seemed to be.
Right, and this guy's wife has a lot of things that we find out about. Basically, she had a nervous breakdown where she suddenly felt her son wasn't her son. She ended up flipping out at school, screaming this. She was taken away to a home for behavioral health. When she was released, she ran over and killed her son, and some folks believe it was not an accident. And since that day, she's basically almost like a walking zombie.
Wait, what are you talking about now? I missed something. This isn't the movie.
What are you talking
about?
Yes, it is. It's the other woman, the creepy woman in the nightgown.
Oh, the other woman. Okay.
Yeah. This is all from the other her backstory.
I'm sorry, I missed that part. I was like, what was I watching?
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, and so this woman, and every scene that this woman's in is in my opinion, some of the scariest scenes of the whole film.
I would agree.
Basically, she says to our lead actress character that your son is not your son. And that's when the movie changes a little bit and starts focusing on whether or not our mother is also going insane. And is it just some sort of insanity, or is it more, and there is supernatural elements into the movie? Because a lot of the scenes that the mother's in with her son, and she begins looking at her son as crazy or weird or whatever, are either semi-dreams where she wakes up, or we're not really sure if she saw it and she's just thinking she sees it, and things like that. So
those moments where a seed of doubt is planted in the audience, until like later in the film, where we're questioning our main character's sanity.
Right. Is she right? Right. And she does like some digital film of her son, and shows it to the Cosmo character, saying, "See, it's not my son." But we, the audience, don't get to see the video, and so we're not sure what was on the video. But based off of how it all plays out, we're thinking that she's just going insane and it's all in her mind.
Until later
that we'll find out what the truth is.
Can we throw up a spoiler flag, by the way?
Yeah, we can throw it up. Okay. Yeah. Let's do that. Let's throw up the spoiler.
Well, and I do want to mention one thing before I forget, Phil. You mentioned earlier about, you know, the trope of the broken family, the broken home, the people running from things. And I just wanted to mention that in general, I think one of the reasons that we see so many damaged people in horror films is because those are the people who are emotionally vulnerable. So, because they are already in a bad spot. They're already going through shit. They already might be having issues where they're not functioning and stable at 100%. So therefore, they would be more susceptible to things like losing their minds. Or if you truly believe that the supernatural really does exist, then you are more vulnerable to the idea of evil. And when you think about it, with people who are broken and in a bad spot, they can get very desperate. So again, the whole idea of a broken person who is struggling with things being more vulnerable to that which is supernatural, or more vulnerable to losing their minds. In a horror film, that's really just a metaphor for what happens in real life. Because when people get broken and desperate, they do broken and desperate things. So that was the only comment I wanted to make, is that I think there's a reason we see this trope. I think it's not just, you know, right, every horror maker in the world, filmmaker in the world, or every horror writer in the world just copies this. I think there's really a reason for it. Like,
It also plays into Eric's point, too, which is he felt that it was the loss of the father. The father died, meaning that would cause damage too, and that would cause people wanting to run away.
I could be wrong. I think they leave it ambiguous on purpose.
Well, they kind of do, and even the line the kid says is ambiguous, because the kid says something like, "You said daddy would be coming later, and he's not," or something like that. It was something like, "Or you said dad was going to come follow us," or "dad was going to follow us," or "dad was
that was going to come late," and
there was some kind of weird line there, and that's what made me think that he wasn't dead, Eric. But still, maybe she didn't tell the son her dad was dead. I mean, I like the idea that it's ambiguous now, and that you threw that out there, because that brings a whole different like spin to this movie. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I also, like, just the idea of damaged people in horror films, though. You know, again, a lot of horror films, the horror is a metaphor. And it's supposed to be reflecting something, and so the protagonist has to have a catharsis, has to have a triumph, and it usually is most effective in good storytelling when that triumph is both internal as well as external. So the monster represents an abusive husband or mm-hmm. your fears or whatever, and you know you have to both overcome the real monster and the one that's inside you as well. So that's where you get a lot of broken people. You don't get a whole, you know, it just,
well, and
happy, well-adjusted people are not dramatically interesting.
Also, there's the fact that in that history of horror we were discussing at the top of the show, they're talking about how genre films have always been used to talk about societal issues in an entertaining format, because if you just, like, if you want to make a movie, if you make a documentary about McCarthyism, you're probably not going to quite get the draw that you get if you make, you know, Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Relatable horror.
And as genre movies have always been partially about discussing societal issues without directly discussing societal issues.
True. Yep. No, that's fair. All right. So let's talk about some of the stuff. So yeah, there's an accident. Basically, she's talking to her son, and someone's in the middle of the road. She hits the person in the middle of the road, and the mirror.
Wait, Phil, you forgot the most important part which is the ass face discussion.
I forgot.
The son's talking about how this kid at school is an ass face, and his mom yells at him for saying ass face, and he goes, anus face? Can I say anus face? And she's like, no, you can't say anus face. So he's like, well, what's a scientific term?
He goes, but it's a science word. It's a science word.
And so basically the side mirror, rearview mirror breaks off, so she hit the person. The person's dressed like a monk.
Or mirror symbols.
Yep, that's right. The person in the road is dressed like a monk, is whispering to themselves. We find out it's a older woman, pretty freaky, and since the older woman doesn't really say anything, doesn't seem hurt, obviously behavioral health issues, she decides to leave, and they drive off. Later in the movie, they discover that it's the woman that I was describing earlier, this backstory or whatever, that just wanders the woods and is married to the actor that from the Game of Thrones that's in the film. Also, she finds a giant hole, as Eric mentioned, in the wiki, in the woods behind her house. And when I say giant hole, we're talking like,
it's like a crater.
A crater, yeah, like a meteor crater. Now, this is one thing I did mention to you, Eric, on instant message that I felt was bizarre, is that she doesn't mention it once to anybody in town. What's your opinion of that big meteor weird crater in the woods? Because you'd think that would be one of the first things someone would speak.
It's a sinkhole, and they're not unheard of.
But
they're not common, even if they're not heard of. So you would think it would be a topic she would have bring up in town to somebody.
How many people in town have gone into the woods looking for holes?
Unless it's a non-traveled area, you're right, Mike.
Well, how many people are traipsing through her backyard?
I live in a rural town, and we have forests everywhere, and if there was a giant sinkhole like that, people would be talking about it, even if it's just one person who sees it. Meaning she...
But she does live out in the middle of fucking nowhere.
But I kind of do, too, and...
And she's new, and I don't get the sense she has much of a social life.
Well, she has a dinner date where she has her...
Nitpicking.
Her employer... And her employer's husband, and then another couple, And they're talking about all sorts of stuff, and she doesn't bring it up once. I don't know. I just felt it was unrealistic. I felt that would be a huge topic to bring up.
I think you're nitpicking.
All right. I don't think so, but fair enough. I mean, you know, I didn't. I just felt that is something that was so bizarre. And, I mean, I think, Abe, you agree with me, right?
Yeah, it's a strange thing. As I say, if it was like a smaller hole, that maybe look strange, but that is so massive.
Right. It's like the size of a football field.
It's big. It's big, you know, and...
That's what she said.
I was waiting.
I had to hit my mute button.
But I do, you know, one thing is interesting is that the whole thing of the imposters... It doesn't become a big scale thing. It only happens to two families, which was quite interesting.
Maybe
it is. We never really get an idea if it was ever a common thing.
Right. All right. So since we're in spoiler territory, we'll discuss. The woman isn't going insane. The mother, she's actually going insane because something real is happening, which is there's basically doppelgangers, the monsters from Dungeons & Dragons, the monsters from German mythology, changelings, as you guys say, in Britannic and Irish mythology. So,
And I was surprised that you liked this movie, Phil, because the last movie we watched that was based on this mythology, you really didn't care for.
No, because I didn't think it was scary. This one, I felt there was enough scenes in it that was like, this is fucking great. Because when I want to see a horror film, I want to be creeped out all right. Time. And I felt this film was very creepy. While I assume you're talking about The Hallows.
Yeah.
Yeah, I even though that was well done, the special effects were awesome, and it was Stark versus... Bolton, the film I felt wasn't really that scary. This one I actually was creeped out many times, so I liked it a lot because of that. Maybe that's another reason why I like it more highly than you would think. So there's changelings or doppelgangers, whatever you want to call them, down out in this pit or crater. And it already affected the one family, and that's the thing with mirrors and cameras and all that, is their reflection, I guess you can see what they really look like.
Yeah, if you're looking at one of them indirectly, you can see that they're not what they appear to be.
Right, and it appears that our crazy woman knew this. And her name was Noreen, and her husband Dez, which is the James Cosmos character, when he sees the video that we, the audience, don't get to see, he obviously sees the monster in the video, and he knows about it, but he just doesn't want to believe it, is my guess. Is that what other people interpreted that?
Because the very fact that this entire incident has taken both his son and wife.
Right, exactly. Yep.
You know, and he's broken at this point. He wants to literally bury everything he's experienced with his wife's body.
Right. Yeah, because his wife is killed by the doppelgangers in the middle of the film. Though we just assume she suicided because she's insane. I guess that's another thing is that no matter how so financially strapped people are to where they live or their job or whatever, I think if I knew double gangers existed, I wouldn't be living there anymore. I would be gone. And he decides to stay, which kind of surprised me. But again, in The Hallows too, Eric, right? The people knew that they were out there, the monsters, mm-hmm. to change things, and yet they decided to stay. And that,
well, because because those few people there, they kept away from a certain area of woods because they considered to be claimed by the creatures, which is why.
And also, I think that this is part of Irish mythology, the changeling myth, and I'm not an expert on it. I'm not going to pretend to be, but maybe it's they don't think that moving to a different area will help because they're wherever.
Yeah, well,
right. Even if it's a mythology, right? That doesn't mean it's real, right? I mean, there's native.
Well, clearly he knows it is at this point.
Right. Yeah.
It's very possible this is a case where he kept doubting and didn't want to believe anything that transpired with his son's death had anything to do with anything greater than just a horrible tragedy. But with his, you know, seeing the video and, of course, his wife's death probably just broke him because he has a hell of an outburst during the last scene with him. You know, he's pretty much broken. He's pretty much done. He just, you know, even when the mother's desperate asking, he's like, please tell me I'm crazy. Please tell me I'm insane. This is not real. And he's like, I can't. He literally can't. He's completely lost himself.
Yeah. All right.
You know, and as I said earlier, we don't know how many instances of these creatures have been, you know, have ever transpired. You know, aside from that one family and, of course, our main characters, we never hear anything else about any disappearances.
Yeah. All right, yeah, I guess if there's one person that refuses to believe it, even though he knows they exist because he sees it, that's fair. I guess if I discovered that stuff like that existed, I'd be like, I'm out of here. I don't think I would be staying around, but I personally don't think
he cares anymore. He's lost everything.
Yeah, well, that's the thing I always bring this. Well, I don't always bring it, but I bring it up a lot. The movie Signs, where the Phoenix, Joaquin Phoenix's character says everything changes because once we now know aliens exist, life changes and everything changes forever and ever. And if I discovered that supernatural stuff actually did exist, I think I would go mentally insane and I couldn't handle it. I don't think I can handle it.
Wow, you are weak.
Yeah, something to consider though. Let's pretend for a moment that she moved away because she didn't know that they were there until her son became one of these things or taken by one of these things.
Yeah.
What would she do?
She would
leave.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Is she taking the Babadook with her? Is she taking the doppelganger with her?
Who are you talking about at this point?
The mom.
The mother.
Which one?
Well, the current.
The main mom. Character or the
main character?
Yeah. Okay.
Does she take the
guy? She did leave.
A week for a second.
Well, she went
I'm
to
so get, confused.
She went back for her son. She pulled a Ripley and went back for her son.
Right.
But she found her son. But I'm saying, you said you'd move away from there.
Yeah, yeah.
He's what's talking that, about the other guy.
Yeah.
Oh, well, he's old. What the fuck, you know?
He's old, so he doesn't matter.
His wife is crazy, and his son is dead. You know, who are they going to, they're going to what, double gang his ass? I mean, just don't go out in the woods. You're okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I honestly think this is a case where
go on, the moral of the story is stay away from strange holes.
Hey, but
she said.
Oh, boom. Abe, you were saying something and you just disappeared on us.
Oh, what I was going to say is, I think the part of the horror of this is not so much this is discovery what transpires, but the fact how much could be lost in that discovery.
Right. Yes. My sanity would be gone. I would be gone.
But in this case, the guy's sanity is probably gone. His family's gone. I don't think he cares at that point about moving away. He's old. He's lost everything. He's broken. He's dead inside. Even if he hasn't physically died, emotionally, he's lost everything.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a fair point. All right. It works. I just don't know if I suddenly discovered that supernatural beings existed or space aliens or something. I don't know what I would do. I couldn't handle it. I'm weak, Eric. I'm weak.
Yeah, I know.
I'm weak.
It's okay. Pet.
there.
Right.
Now, it's another creatures, too, is they played a very what's interesting about these Chinese lens is that we get some of the basic mythology about them, but we see a couple of moments where they also do some strange things, especially when we get to the Borrow scene.
Go ahead and explain it.
Well, okay, so basically the changelings is that they switch around. They take a child or a person, and then they replace them with a fake that acts as a creature but hides in the under the guise of a normal human being. But when we get to a point where our main character is pulling out his son and is grabbed by one of the creatures, she sees, I don't know if it was herself, or another woman?
Oh, no. What she sees is one of the changelings or doppelgangers turned into her.
Yes.
Okay, I had a question about that, too, so I'm glad Abe asked.
I couldn't really understand exactly what it was.
What happens is she was getting chased by the doppelgangers, and one of them grabbed her and turned into her. So it was similar
to
what
we see.
Once they
touch you, they can take your form.
Right. So basically, it was going to do, Invasion of the Body Snatchers tour is what it was going to do, and she kills it before and escapes before it can escape.
So basically, contact alone is enough to cause transformation. Okay,
at least this version.
That at least makes some sense there, because I wasn't sure if it was just some kind of strange spell, but I guess the physical contact makes sense actually.
Right. Again, even at that point, I was still thinking that maybe this is all in her mind and she's going insane. And to be honest, when you really think about it, even at the end of the film, all of it could have been in her mind and she was just going insane.
Well, here's a funny thing about that, too, is that the creatures live in that sinkhole. But she hasn't seen any creature crawl in there. She doesn't see a creature crawl out.
The way she sinks in, the whole scene
felt
surreal rather than real.
Yeah, these are folklore creatures. These aren't, science fiction creatures where we have to look at the whole ecology of what do doppelgangers eat? What's their mating rituals? Where do they do their shopping? So I don't have a problem with fairy creatures.
Well, it's not just that. It's how she figures out they're in the hole. That was where my question comes down. She literally just goes right to the hole and assumes that's where she's going to find everything.
Right.
She saw the title of the movie.
Right. Yeah, there you go. Right. The hole in the ground. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is the way that she discovers it,
she found her son's toy out there.
And that's why she thinks that, that's what leads her back to the hole, exactly. So the question is that when she goes back to the hole, she sinks into the hole, she fights the monsters become her, she kills the monster, and then we have a flash forward to months later where she's in a city now, and the whole room is filled with mirrors and she's taking photos of her son often just to make sure that he's not a doppelganger or a changeling. The thing is the whole incident where she goes to the hole and becomes Ripley, the way it happens felt more surreal than if it was actually happening. In other words, it wasn't like she just walked in and says, we're searching and going on. It was like very interesting way that makes me feel that maybe it was all fake in her head and she's just still, in other words, like the Babadook, like that film questions whether or not everything was real as well and if it was just her insane.
I don't think that's in question here, because when she retrieves her son, the doppelganger is still locked in the basement.
Yeah,
there were things that happened in the film that and I think there's something to be said, and I was wondering if this was where they're going, where her son is changing, and that has a different metaphor, right? The idea that sometimes your children grow up and you don't really recognize them for, who they're becoming.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking teenagers.
and her boss even talks about her own children that way.
Right. And so I was wondering, could this be the crazy lady, and it's really her son is just perfectly fine, and she's just nuts. And then there are events that happen, and I apologize, but I don't remember what they were. Where I'm like, okay, no, if this was all in her head, then that probably would not have happened that way.
That's oddly reminds me of the film The Witch, right? Because that whole movie, we're not sure if it's just insanity until the very end, where we're pretty much sure, okay, it's real.
Assuming she's not on hallucinogenics or something, yes.
Right, exactly, yeah.
And
like,
here's
what's
the...
that train film, the subway film from Canada, End of the Line.
Yeah.
Here's the other interesting thing that I had a thought, Phil, when you were said, yeah, we're not sure that some of it's in her mind. You know what's interesting to me? The doctor gave her pills, and that's when shit really started to go south with her. After he gave her pills, not before.
Yeah,
it was specifically after, because I even went back and checked, and I was like, what the hell pill did he put her on? Like, did it maybe push her over the edge? Because I too saw that as a possibility. Like, maybe this is all in her head, and she's
because
really
of the drugs. Yeah, maybe she's even abusing the
drugs.
Because
of the
right?
drugs. Yeah. Yeah. That was what I kind of thought could be a possibility. And I still think you almost might be able to go either way with this. I'd have to actually watch the movie again.
I disagree. I think it's proven in the movie that this is all actually happening.
No,
yeah.
I'm kind of with Chrissy on this.
I would honestly, I can't make a judgment call, Eric, for sure.
And who did she find in the pit?
Yeah, there was a dead person in the pit.
Again, though, the whole pit could have been her unreliable narrator, drug-induced insanity.
Yeah,
and
who did she
burn in the house?
Nobody.
That's what I was
because
really
she never got arrested. There would have
not
been a court, right? The house got burnt down, and there would have been a dead body in the basement.
You didn't see the APB.
So if there's no... If she's not in jail, or at least they don't show any of the
if you choose to believe that it didn't actually happen, that's a choice that you're intentionally making because they show you in the movie that it actually happened.
No, Eric, let me just finish.
End of the line was that way too, right, Mike? It showed us it all happened, and then
when you watched that again, and that was a movie I know I had watched twice for the podcast. And we worked it through. There were hints and clues, you know, starting with everyone eating the muffins from the Muffin Man. and them talking about, they had talked about like hallucinogenics at some point, you know, and that we were seeing things from the point of view, we were seeing things just from the point of view of the characters when we saw like demons and things like that. So...
Wait. I got it. Phil, you texted me about this last night.
Yes.
You said, playing the game with the son and he doesn't know what it is, genius. Okay, so the mother and the son had this little game where she would count to three and then they would both make a funny face at each other.
Right.
And to test him during the movie, she does that. She counts to three and he just sits there and he doesn't know what she's trying to get him to do. And that's where she really finds out that he's not him anymore. And if this is all in her head, then why did that happen?
Right.
Because he's a kid, and sometimes kids are little dicks.
that's fair.
And here's my point that I've been trying to say. I'm not saying, because I was kind of convinced in the movie that, yes, this was really happening. I could have gone the way of, hey, this is all in her head. All I'm saying is that I think that if you studied the movie closely enough, you might be able to make enough to support the idea that a lot of it was in her head. Or, of course, the other option is that it really is happening, but it was exacerbated and made much worse because of the shit that is going on in her head. You could also go that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think you need to have more, right? More solid evidence. I don't know. And again, I have to go back and watch it and see if there's anything that's explicitly contradictory.
That's what I mean. I want to go back now and watch it a second time and see if I see any of that. I'm not disagreeing I wouldn't disagree with anybody who said, I think this shit was all in her head, because I think the filmmakers did put enough stuff in there to at least make you wonder for a second if it's in her head.
I see movies all the time and TV shows all the time where they put enough in the head to make you think it was the boyfriend that was the murderer, but really it was the gardener. You know, it's, there's stuff to put in your head for her to question herself, but that don't know that they pay it off. I would want more evidence to, than just, well, I suspected it, and then I'm going to cling to that because I want it to be what it is, as opposed to what were the filmmakers really saying.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think they intentionally do that, and they front load it at the beginning of the movie, because it's no fun if you don't wonder for at least a little while.
Oh, yeah.
But then they show you what's going on.
Yeah. One thing too is that one thing is that certainly clear is that even after escaping the hole and the creatures, she is forever written with doubt. Even after seemingly saving her son from everything, because she's now even with all the pictures and the mirrors around her, she's not convinced. And with something that she could be living with forever, maybe even to the point she could go to insane herself, just like the old woman did.
Well, I don't know if she's not convinced or if she has it there as like crucifixes in the house.
Right, exactly, yeah.
But it says there's that seed of doubt. Even after she burned down the house, killed one of the creatures, and escaped, and left the entire town she was staying at, she's still not convinced that.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Now she knows these creatures exist. So now she's always going to be worried that they could be out there. In other words, if I ever found out there
Which
was aliens
makes
or vampires,
complete sense.
Yes, exactly. If I found out there was vampires in the world, from that day on, I'd be putting up the crucifixes, just like Mike said. So, I think it could be like that, Abe.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's sort of like them rolling out the TV at the end of Poltergeist. You know, it's just.
Right.
You know, I don't want any more of this. I just, nope.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. That's the thing. It's open ended. I see where Eric, you could, more people are going to lean with you for sure, which is
that it's because I'm right.
Real. That it's all real. Well, you know, you probably are.
I mean, I don't know if I think I might have told this story, but I was taking an international film class in college. There was a kid in the class that I don't know for what reason he was called Colonel Sanders, and the kid was an idiot. And we watched the movie, a Herzog film called The Gira Wrath of God, about a conquistador who goes insane traveling up the Amazon River.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that film.
And at the end, Colonel Sanders goes, "Oh, I get it. It was all a dream." And like, you could just see the professor just facepalm. You know, he was like, "No, it wasn't a dream. It was a dream. He's gone mad. He's just crazy." It was just there is, you know, you have to sometimes, you have to make the argument. I think the argument is on the person here making the claim that this is a dream. And I don't know that there's enough for it.
Right. No, that's fair. Let's see. What else? What are the scenes that we missed or parts we wanted to discuss? She was partly going insane, right? Because, I mean, when she sees her son on stage and the son's talking back to her and no one else is there, you know, I mean, these are definitely, I don't know. I mean, there's enough there that she's going insane.
Yeah, I would agree. And like I did say, I did notice that she started to go more south after the doctor gave her whatever those drugs were. And sometimes in the real world, you can give a person a drug to help them, but it affects them adversely.
That's true. Ambien.
Yeah, Latuda. Latuda. If you give Latuda to someone who is not, it's what they use to treat, I believe, severe bipolar, but also, what's the other one? Schizophrenia. If you are not diagnosed with either of those things and they give you Latuda, they know that you will lose your shit. they know that you will start hallucinating, you will start doing all these things because you don't have the brain chemistry that is necessary for this drug to work. So therefore, the drug will just destroy your brain. Like, they know this. So that was kind of my thought, was like, oh, I didn't for one second think that this wasn't really happening, but I was just like, oh man, she's really going off the deep end, because look, the doctor gave her those pills and he's like, well, it's not really strong stuff, but don't really take it unless you're going to bed.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of what tipped me off, because I was like, oh, that is really strong shit then. Because he doesn't want her driving a car. He doesn't want her doing anything. He says, just take it before bed. So what the hell is it he gives her? And you know?
Honestly, that's a precaution with lots of medications. What I thought was interesting is the point in the movie where she goes into the sinkhole. Because, honestly, that scene creeped me out probably more than any other in this movie. I don't know if I could just sit there and let myself sink into the ground on purpose. That would freak me out. And, yeah, and that was a real leap of faith at that point in the movie where she just like gets in there and, and lets herself get taken in.
That's why that was one of the scenes that made me think that none of this was really happening and she was just dreaming it, like she dreamt when she was watching her kid on stage and he started talking to her from the stage. You know, because it was.
Oh, that was awesome.
Yeah.
That was so messed up.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's why the scenes that scared me the most was like when the woman, the crazy woman's at the gate and just staring at her and turns. And even my dog was like freaking out. It was just like the weirdest scene. And that, I think, was the scene that made me say, this film is fucking great.
I thought that was the moment in the film for me, Phil, that was the scariest.
Me too.
Honestly, absolutely. When she just turned and just looked at the car. And I think what made that so creepy was that she was not abnormal. Not really. It was just an old lady in a nightgown. And think about how disturbed we all are by the idea of getting old, the idea of being infirm. Some of us may even, unfortunately, have elderly people that in our lives. I know I do, an elderly aunt who has dementia.
Exactly.
And that the reason that I think was so upsetting was because, my God, that's not supernatural, dude. That shit happens. Like, you could totally see that shit happen right in front of you driving to work. Like, that's why that was so disturbing, is because it wasn't actually out of the ordinary. It was an everyday thing that any one of us at any time could absolutely run into.
At Walmart.
I did want to mention the hole, since we were talking about it. What I thought was interesting about the hole was, again, you guys were talking before, Abe was talking about erasing the past, moving on from the past, scraping down the wallpaper. One of the metaphors for me in this film was that the hole really represented the hole that can swallow you if you do not deal with your past, if you are not able to move on. That it is that hole that can swallow you. I also thought, Abe, that the peeling of the wallpaper, the peeling of the labels off, was also kind of peeling back the identity.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's a whole theme going on here with identity, and who is her son really? And she's trying to get at the layer, and layers, and who is she?
Mm-hmm. You know? I think also too that the fact that the removal of the colorful, paper revealing the white blankness kind of reveals the blankness of the lack of identity the creatures have that without steal, because they lack any real identity without stealing another.
Yes.
They have no real features aside from a gaping mouth, which is kind of hinted at in the mirror scene, the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where the boy is like opening his mouth and playing specifically with his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And they focus in on they kind of focus in on the hole there. Yeah,
it's reminiscent of how the changelings look later in the burrow.
Yeah, exactly. What we're referring to. And it said it's also just a gaping mouth that feels like it could swallow you whole.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, and that's why I said this movie did so great with foreshadowing. Because, there's a lot of stuff that, comes back later And it's, I don't know. I think this movie did well in a lot of points. But anyway, I'll be quiet now because I think Phil was going to say something.
No, I wasn't. No. Let's see. Other things that we wanted to bring up directly related to specific scenes or symbolism or whatever. I know I did go back and read reviews on the film because I was curious what other folks had felt, you know, like real reviewers from major magazines and whatnot. And they said that they felt that this was a commentary on the fright of being a mother, the stress of being a mother, everything about a mother. You know, so similar to like Babadook, in other words.
I won't say it's not.
Yeah. Or at least a parent, anyway, if not a mother. But
well, it touches on it just like Jaws kind of touches on the fear of going in the water, but or mm-hmm. being alive. But I think there's more to it because any parent has fear about you know their child being abducted. There might even be a documentary or two about that.
right.
Sometimes it happens in plain sight.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
That's what I've heard.
And yes, and weird things in cars happen. All right, that's fair. But I think a lot of these reviewers that I read, a lot of them felt that it was an allegory on motherhood. And whether that's what they got out of it or not, you're probably right, Mike. I don't know if the director said, gee, let's make a movie about the fear of being a mother and the stress about being a mother.
If you're looking at, like, if I'm doing a, I don't know, horror movies for moms, right? Or if I'm looking for a mommy horror film, you know, this could absolutely be one, you know, along with something like Grace, you know, because it's playing on the mother's fears of what's going to happen
right.
to her child. And,
right. You know, Prodigy, The Golem.
Prodigy and all these things. What?
Orphan.
Yeah, Joshua. What are these fears that you know that a mother? But it doesn't necessarily even have to be child horror, but it's of the fear of something terrible happening to your child. So, you know, and that's clearly playing off of that here, and it's an element in it.
But it's also the element of I think they're also talking about not just worrying about your child or the stress about it, the mother with the child, but also the loss of your own independence because now your child is your dependent. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I don't feel that was... I didn't get that as a... I mean, it was a part of a theme in the film,
mm-hmm.
and they do talk about that and that her life changed, but I don't know. There seems to be more in this film than just whatever, mommy issues.
Right, sure.
It's complex. There's a lot of anxiety that goes with being a parent, so I've been told. But I think there's more to it because there's also, I wouldn't say she's a normal woman and with a, you know, normal parent-child relationship, you know, there's other things in the backstory there.
Right.
You know, if they had pulled out generic family, you know, which is like what it looks like if you've seen the trailers for Us, you know, where it's, you got the family mm-hmm. with mom and dad and son and daughter.
Why would you watch a trailer?
Because they don't suck.
They absolutely do.
Because trailers are awesome.
But going
yeah,
with your
so,
point,
but I'm saying, so that's more of a generic, what we think of as like the family experience. And I don't know that this is a typical mommy
right.
experience.
At least my family, whether it was my family
right.
when I was a kid or whether it's my family now
right.
with my own children.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
I'm just saying I think it would have been more of a generic situation as opposed to the slightly more specific thing they were going with here.
Right.
Well, and what I was just going to say, too, is, you know, in response to, oh, we're going to sit down and make a movie about a mom and terror. You know, I've said this before and I'll see it again. A lot of filmmakers, a lot of writers, a lot of artists, you know, many times we really don't know what it is we are trying to say. there's something deep within us that we are trying to express that we cannot articulate, and we sit down and it comes out as fiction or as a piece of artwork. And then what happens is, and this is why it's all subjective, those that are viewing it or reading it pick up and engage with different things that are in that film because they bring their own experience to it. That's part of the art. So I would think that anyone who came to me and said, this movie is about the fears of being a mother, I wouldn't disagree with them. Now, I didn't pick up on that, but I'm not a mom. But somebody who is a mom say, that's what this movie said to me. You know, to me, this movie was about a woman trying to find her identity. And even I took it a little bit step further for myself and said, she is afraid that her son is going to grow up and be abusive like his father, which is why she freaked out when he killed the spider. That's what I got out of it. But
yeah, that's interesting.
Got out of it that she was just worried that he was a sociopath where he would kill animals.
Yeah, but maybe his dad was.
You're not a sociopath if you kill a spider. Jesus Christ, give me a break.
I'm telling you what she's thinking. I'm not saying what I was thinking.
Yeah, well, I think it's how he did it.
It was how he did it, not the fact. He was like, you lied, smash. You know, and the way that she reacted to that told me that, I wonder if the husband treated her like that.
You mean
like, did he ever sit there and go, you lie and yell and scream and outburst?
And outburst.
Because she shuddered. She took a second and shuddered, and it was really kind of interesting. That's why I kind of want to watch this again.
She's going to have to train him like Dexter's dad did with him.
Yeah. But, I mean, just my point is, I think the director sat there and said, I'm going to make a movie about the fears of parenthood? No, I don't. Do I think it kind of inherently just kind of came out in the story? Yeah, probably. Because sometimes things get expressed that you don't specifically go into writing or creating something saying, this is what I'm going to say. It's just different little pieces of things come out.
Right. I don't think it's quite as, like I mentioned Mom and Dad earlier. Mom and Dad, it underlines exactly what that film is about. You know, it's like saying to the audience, in case you missed it, here's what this film is about. You know, it's text as well as subtext. You know, I don't think that's entirely the case here. I think you can read a lot of different things into it.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Oh, yeah. I think this film is very leveled. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I really enjoyed watching it was because there were so many different things for me to roll around and play in as a person who likes to really analyze stories. You know, if it was just a straight up horror film with none of this substance to it, I don't know if I would have enjoyed it as much.
Well, it depends. If it had more of those creepy scenes like the old woman at the gate, that was like staring creepily at us.
Yeah, true. That was still so awesome.
That would make it still an awesome film, in my opinion, if it had that type of, even if it didn't have symbolism. Because again, even with all the cool stuff that movies can have, whether they're horror or not, with symbolism and perspective and all that, the main reason I like horror films is because I want a creepy film, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Some people want gore or whatever, but whatever reason you like a horror film, you know, you like a horror film. Some people like it just for the symbolism. I mean,
well, you can put symbolism and metaphor in anything, right? It's how it's how they deliver it,
right?
You know,
and you don't even need it too if they deliver a film that's entertaining too. I mean, that's how my brother looks at films anyway. But go on, Mike. Continue.
No, that was it.
Oh, okay. All right. Anything else anybody want to bring up? Did we miss anything that was interest that people wanted to continue with, bring up?
I don't know. Abe, did you get to say what you wanted to say?
I think overall this is a film that is it's especially for each viewer. Some of us saw it as a film that is showing a complete collapse of rationality. Others have seen it as an encroachment of a supernatural threat that threatens to steal identities. I really, why I really like films like this is how much they can tell in such a short amount of time and use their time well. That's another thing I really like, the fact it didn't drag. It told, each scene had a purpose to really to represent each part of the puzzle and each important thing for character and for the creatures and stuff like that. Everything served a purpose. I didn't feel like any scene that was presented was out of place.
Yeah, no, that's good. True. Anybody else have any further things they wanted to bring up?
I just got a question. Am I the only one who kind of laughed when the kid started smacking the mom around?
Oh, and yes. Yeah, that was...
I was? Okay. Because, like, yeah. You just kind of see her flying through the air.
That was a scene that kind of ended up being a little unintentionally funny for me. I really wasn't feeling much of the intensity. The conversation, really, at that point was good, but I don't know.
I think it was necessary, though, because otherwise, what threat is this kid? If
I know,
saying it's not necessary. I'm just fine. It was just kind of wham, holy shit, you know.
I understand that you had to show the creature's strength and stuff like that, but I think the way it looked kind of silly when seeing her CGI by flying across the room.
Well, no, that's a fear. I mean, I remember, Mike, you saw our film with me and Chrissy. We reviewed it. The episode hasn't come out yet because it's one that has to be edited more carefully. The Gorgium Haunted Asylum, and you felt there was one scene where Chrissy thought was scary as hell, but you felt it was a little over the top when the ghost woman makes that weird sound with her mouth. And they zoom in on her face.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You said you laughed. You felt it was funny, not scary. Well, Chrissy felt it was scary.
Well, I thought that was funny because I just didn't think it didn't work for me. This, I thought, it's not that it didn't work for me, but it was just sort of that, I don't know. It was just a...
Were you all of a sudden see her fly across the room through the doorway?
Yeah, where the kid, like...
Yeah, I did kind of actually laugh, because it was just like, what the fuck? Like, I was like, you didn't see... You know why? Because
you didn't see anything.
It was silent 1 minute, and the next minute you just see this fucking body, like, flying through the air. You're like, what the hell was that?
Right, because you're not expecting it, you know? It's just...
You're not expecting it. So it wasn't like a ha-ha laugh. It's sometimes...
It's a shocking laugh, right? I guess.
For me, it was actually pretty funny. I didn't think the presentation I'd seen during the attack itself was all that well animated. I think everything, the computation of the game and everything up to that point was really well done. I just didn't think the actual attack was all that done that well. It kind of reminded me how the golem attacks were handled. You know, they didn't really come up as really all that terrifying. They ended up getting kind of funny trying to see this little kid throw people around. It just didn't have the actual impact.
Well, I think in the Golem, they were trying really hard, and probably here too, they're trying hard not to have the child directly involved in scenes of explicit violence, mm-hmm. right? So if there is explicit violence, it happens off screen, or if the kid is doing something in the Golem, it's waving his hands and using the Force.
Right.
Yeah, because they don't want to show a child being... Now, I got to be honest. I think if I was an 8-year-old kid and they said, I want you to pretend to beat the shit out of somebody, or I want you to pretend to punch your hand through someone's chest, I would have been like, awesome! But, so I don't think they're trying to protect the kid, but I think there are just so many people who would find it distasteful to use a child.
Yeah, they're trying to protect the sensibilities of the audience.
Yeah.
Just the fact that the woman's being beaten up too. Again, it's child to woman, but a lot of times when they show domestic abuse on film, a lot of times they pan away and you just hear the screams of the woman and the thuds of the punches hitting. And because, you know, why show it? You know, similar to like Game of Thrones when during the Sansa Ramsay scene, they turn away, you know, and you just hear things. So here, I guess maybe that it could have been that too, where,
or it's possibly they didn't have the resources to make the attack look convincing enough. just had her, the actress, jump across, be animated, be thrown across, because, you know, it's like, for example, in the old Pet Cemetery, they had to use a doll for most of the attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, no, that's fair. It's curious. I don't know. Let's see. Anything else?
I'm good.
Anyway. I'm good.
Yeah, I think I'm good, too.
I'm done.
Yeah, me too. I mean, we pretty much...
Oh, I would like to say I really loved the score. I thought the musical score for this was really beautiful because it was mostly strings
and it was
single piano. It was very melancholy. It was more melancholy than creepy, I thought, but there was something...
Well, it depends on the scene. It depends on the scene.
Yeah, I just really thought it was beautiful. This is definitely a score I would buy if it were available to write to.
Well,
I really liked it.
To add to that, like when anytime they had the old woman, they always had like creepy, scary music that made the scene even more scary. So I thought that was good. I do dislike the fact these Irish films, these Irish horror films anyway, all are muted. They mute their colors. So like whether it's the one about the cow, the
isolation.
Yeah, isolation. Whether it's this one, whether it's Hollow.
It's on Amazon Prime now, isn't it?
Whether it's Wake, what was it, Wake Forest or Wake something? I mean, every
Wakewood.
One of the Wakewood. That's it. Yeah, every one of them, including this one, they use filters and get rid of a lot of the color in the film, and I don't know what it is. I can't stand it.
You're right, Phil, but it doesn't bother me. I kind of enjoy it, actually.
Because they're horror films. They want them to look bleak.
Yeah, it never works for me. I've never liked horror films that do it. And even though I like this film and I like a lot of horror films that do it, it's one thing that I wish they wouldn't do.
If you want a horror movie with bright colors, watch The Tragedy Girls.
Yeah. There you go.
Right. Well, it doesn't have to be bright colors. It could just be natural colors. I just want natural colors, you know. I mean, if it's a sunny afternoon or just an afternoon, I don't need a gray, bluish world around me. You know, it just doesn't.
Almost nobody uses natural colors in film anymore. You can thank the Coen brothers for that. They're always tweaked to give a color palette to the film. Sometimes they enhance the colors, but very few are actually still using natural color.
Right.
Yeah, I see. If I'm just offended by the fact that they always have the Irish people speaking funny. That's a negative stereotype, and they need to get rid of it.
Well, actually, to be honest, this film is pretty good. The accents of the Irish in this film weren't very thick at all. I understood everybody with no issues. Some films that are in Irish accented, I mean, you need subtitles like how The Witch, that movie, I actually put on subtitles. Which was a British film, I had to put subtitles on. But this one, I didn't have
Cockneys versus Zombies, I think, was another one I needed subtitles for.
Even Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, I couldn't understand a damn thing anybody was saying in that movie.
I had a problem with Lock, Stock,
and Two Smoking Barrels.
That's a film I would love to do an episode on. That movie was awesome. The best.
No movie I had a hard time understanding? Any movie with Tom Hardy in it.
Tom Hardy? Really? Yeah, all right. Yeah, Bronson was a tough one, yeah.
Let's wrap this up.
All right.
Bane, Dunkirk, Mad Max, I mean, just... Okay.
Bloody hell. All right, so...
I think this is the sign that we are toast.
Okay.
So,
Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Ascansity Podcast. That's spelled ASKANCITY. You can find it on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play.
Excellent. And Mike, you do a few podcasts with myself and Eric and a blog, and we're about to start.
The blog is on Natural Selections on www.unnaturalselections.com. And it's going to be interesting because we've got season 2 of American Gods debuting this weekend, and we will be covering it for Dark Discussions. Now, there's been a lot of shakeup. We'll talk about that, and hopefully it won't suck, because if it sucks, we might bail early. But we'll be starting that, and that'll be coming soon, and we'll certainly be discussing, I guess, some of the cast changes and what went on behind the scenes.
as well as discussing the new season, and that's going to be in about a week. And then a couple of months, about a month after that, we'll be starting You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, a Game of Thrones podcast, and Phil and I are going to have to decide if we want to do three podcasts a week. And then sometime in 2020, probably, will be the return of Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, a Westworld podcast.
Very good. And Chrissy, you do things.
I do. I write short dark fiction mostly. I haven't been too active on posting on my blog, but you can find out more about me and my work at ChristyPetersonSchoonover.com.
Excellent. And Abe, where can people find Dark Discussions?
You can find us at darkdiscussions.com. All episodes that we have recorded, or at least most of them, in fact, have been put on our main page, and there's still more to come, so stay tuned for more episodes. They're all free to listen to. If you're interested in other topics, whether different podcasts or maybe blogs, you can look in the right-hand side. There'll be links to them right over there.
That's right. And at the bottom of every page is our email, links to Spotify, Stitcher, all those places. You find us wherever podcasts are found. Our email is darkdiscussions@aol.com. Please send us your emails and suggestions. We'd love to read your emails on the podcast. And Eric, what's this thing about Patreon?
We have a Patreon account for the podcast. It's an online service that lets you support online artists such as podcasters. So if you'd like to help us offset the costs of use, we appreciate all donations. For every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have to take all the topics submitted and draw them on a quarterly basis. For more details, you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com.
Excellent. And I guess we can give our final thoughts about this film, so I'll start. I think this film is very solid. I think this may be my favorite horror film of the year. As I stated at the beginning, I'm still wishy-washy on it, but again, we have plenty of films to come to see where we're going to get at. But all in all, a solid horror film, and there was enough creepy parts of this film to make me say it was solid. And the number one thing I like about horror films, and the reason I would want to watch a horror film, is for creepy moments, and this film most certainly does it. Eric?
I also like this film. I don't think I'm quite as high on it as Phil is, but I still enjoyed it quite a bit and definitely recommend it for our listeners.
Excellent. And Mike?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I recommend it. I'm not sure how much. Again, it's one I really want to rewatch, and so I'll probably end up purchasing it digitally at some point. And I, like I said, I recommend it, especially if you like creepy kid movies. This also, I know we got at least two more creepy kid movies coming out this year. So this might be the year of the creepy child.
All right, very good. Let's go with Chrissy, yeah?
Yeah, I liked this movie. I think it's got a lot of really interesting things to say. I think it works on a bunch of different levels, and I certainly think story-wise that it's solid. Overall, I give it a recommend.
All right, very good, very good. And Abe?
Overall, it's a really well-made film. Well shot, good performances. It does have some creepy scenes, and there is also some number of layers to it. We have a lot to talk about tonight, and while it may not be, it will, be for everybody, but I still think it, for this year in terms of releases, it's one in the horror genre that I think deserves a shot. And maybe, you'll see, my experience might not have been the highest of everybody here. Maybe it would be somebody else. But overall, a good film and a good discussion.
All right, very good. So I guess with that stated, this film, once again, is called The Hole in the Ground, 2019 Irish film, distributed by A24. And with that all stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right, thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about The Hole in the Ground. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.
That's what she said.
What?
Huh?
The Hole in the Ground? I don't know.